Okay, good morning. Once again, I'm never quite sure how the sound's going to work, so do let me know if there's an issue. In any case, my thought for today, I guess there is a midterm coming up next week. And I just put up a couple of exams from last year that you can midterm exams from last year that you can look at for practice. So see 2020 exams on the webpage. Okay, and let's see. So otherwise, my thought was to do a little bit more with Banach spaces in general, and then go to the very special case that we're going to focus on for a while, which is to say power series. So today, a little bit more, one more example of a Banach spaces, just to give a little bit more feel for that, and then power series. Okay, so let me start then with Banach spaces. Let me just start by reminding you of the examples that, one example that we had, and then make use of that to give another one. Okay, so so recall something I went through, at least a sketch or a proof of this week, was that if we take the continuous functions on some closed interval, let me just choose a specific one. Works for anyone, but let me take 0, 1, and then use the soup norm. This is a Banach space. And notationally, this norm comes up a lot. Let me just give a bunch of different names. So for this same norm, I'm going to just sometimes I'll call it the soup norm, and sometimes, since it agrees with the uniform convergence, I'll sometimes just call it the uniform norm. And it actually has another name, it has two other names. So I'm also going to call it the C0 norm, because it works on continuous functions like we have right above there. And I'm also going to call it the infinity norm for reasons that come up in the next of course, but we'll see that notation again when we start with integrals. Anyway, they're all just different names for exactly the same thing. So those are, it's because it's the most common one to use, but we have some others. And then let me just do one example. So theorem here. So just like the example that we had of C1, you can keep going. And so there's a notion of a C2 and a C3 and et cetera. And so if we take the twice continuously differentiable functions on 0, 1, then it also is a Banach space if you give it the right norm. And so the right norm, since it's twice differentiable, you want to take into account both of those derivatives, and that's what you want to do. So let me just give it a name and then write out what it is. C2 is Banach. So far, this doesn't make sense because I haven't told you what C2 is. So I have to tell you what that is. So the C2 norm of a function. Okay, and we're gonna take the soup norm of the function, just like we did with the C1 norm. And then we're gonna do something where we involve the first derivative. So we're gonna take the first derivative and take the maximum value that it achieves. And then actually, I wanna modify this a little bit. You'd guess, and it's not unreasonable to just take the soup norm of the second derivative, but I'm gonna put in a 1/2 here, and you'll see why in a bit. But anyway, the statement would be true even without the 1/2, but the 1/2 is useful for something, a fun little trick later. So this, now I look at the second derivative and take it. So I just keep adding up the soup norm so that the maximum value that the function, its first derivative and the second derivative take, and that makes sense, of course, because my functions are twice differentiable, so they have two derivatives. All right. All right, so how would I go about proving this? So proof. Proof over here. All right, so what do we have to do? So first we need to check that this is in fact a normed linear space. So C0 is a vector space. I'm sorry, C2, not C0. Of course, we're working with C2 here. Is a real vector space from earlier. Right, we can add and multiply by reals, and we still get things that are twice differentiable because we know how to differentiate from before linearity of derivatives. Okay, so we have a vector space. Good. That's the first thing we need. And so then we need that this is a norm. So this C2 thing is a norm. Okay, and there are just the three things to check. So the first thing is if I take the any function whose C2 norm is zero. Okay, well, what does that mean? So that means, so this is the maximum value that my function takes plus the maximum value that its derivative takes plus a half the maximum value that its second derivative takes. And if that's zero, then each one is zero. Then, and actually, I'm not going to need it, but let me just mention it because it's because I think it helps clarify what's going on. All three of these are zero, but I'm actually not going to. I'm only going to use it. The first one is, but all three are actually zero. But all I need is that the sup norm is zero. If the maximum is zero, then the whole function is zero. Okay, so that's the first thing. And then secondly, if I compute the, let me say I have a real number. So if k is in R, yeah, then when I take the sup norm of, the C2 norm of k times it, well, by linearity again of derivatives, the k just comes out. So this is equal to the absolute value of k times sup norm of f plus absolute value of k times the sup norm of f prime plus a half absolute value of k times the sup norm of f double prime, which is what we needed. So this is equal to absolute value of k times the two norm of f, okay, by again linearity of derivatives. Since derivatives are linear. Okay, so that's the second one. And then the trickiest one is the triangle inequality. So if we have two functions, okay, then I can write down a bound for the C2 norm of the sum. Of course, that's just equal to the sup norms. And again, I can just use the fact that we have a norm in the sup setting. So I just add them all up. So this is a f plus g sup norm plus f prime plus g prime, again, using linearity, plus a half f double prime plus g double prime, again, using linearity of derivatives. Right. Okay, and then this is less than or equal to, and now I can just split each of these up. So can anyone see why I get this first So what am I using to get this inequality here? Yeah, that's right. That's the triangle inequality for the usual soup norm. So I'm just bootstrapping on the fact that I know that the soup norm satisfies the triangle inequality because it's a norm linear space, and so I can just use it three times, and then I'm done. So and so then the rest are the same. So I take the first derivative of both of them. And then I take one half of the second derivative of both of them. Okay, and so this is equal to what we needed. So the C2 norm of F plus the C2 norm of G. And as mentioned, let me just write it out. So this is since the soup norm is a norm. Okay, so I just bootstrap on what I already know about the one that I started with, and I get that this new one satisfies it. Okay, so any questions about that? So I've shown that, maybe I should write what I've shown. So this is that we have a normed linear space. Okay. So any questions about showing that it's a normed linear space? All right, and what remains to show? Right, so a Banach space, that's a normed linear space, so that whenever I have a sequence that is Cauchy, it's also convergent. Okay, so that's what I have to do next. I have to show that every Cauchy sequence is in fact convergent. Cauchy implies convergent. Okay, so that's the last thing to do here. So let me do that. So So let's just assume that we have a Cauchy sequence and prove that it is convergent. So all right, so if some sequence Fn is C2 Cauchy in my space, which is the C2 functions, twice continuously differentiable functions on the interval of 0, 1, then what does that mean? So to be a C2 Cauchy means that for every epsilon greater than 0, oops, that's an epsilon, agreed. So every epsilon greater than 0, there exists some number m. And whenever I take two numbers n and m that are at least capital M, then I have that the two norm, C2 norm of Fn minus Fm is less than epsilon, right? That's just the definition of being C2 Cauchy. But let's see, but this is of course equal to just writing out the definition. So Fn minus Fm soup norm plus F prime n minus F prime m by linearity soup norm plus a half F double prime n, plus F double prime M minus F double prime M soup norm, right? Just writing out the definition. So that's our definition. Okay, but these are all positive. So if this whole thing is less than epsilon, what can I say about each one of these? Yeah. Actually, I can't quite do that, but at least I can get that they're less than epsilon. Okay. It could be that one of them's epsilon and the others are zero. That could be. Okay. But what I know is that that none of them are bigger than epsilon. So, and that's what I'm going to use. So, each term is less than or equal to epsilon. So I've got each of those terms is less than epsilon. All right, so then what does that tell me? Hence, well, so that means that for every epsilon greater than zero, I have an M, so that for every N and M, I have that the supernorm is less of N minus M is less than epsilon. So what does that tell me about the sequence Fn in supernorm? Does that make sense? So should I write more? Or is it clear? So for each epsilon, there exists an M. For all N and M, I have that the Fn minus Fm. Yeah, that's right. I see it now in the chat. That's exactly right. It's convergent. And let me write that in two steps. The first thing I know is that it's Cauchy, and then we prove that for supernorm, Cauchy implies convergent, right? Because we have that completeness. So let me start with Cauchy, hence convergent by 9.16. Okay, so that's something we proved, that if once we have it's Cauchy, then it's convergent. Okay, and so what about the derivative? If I take the sequence of derivatives, okay. So again, I have for all epsilon, there exists M, for all N and M, I have, well, now I can look at this term, right? So the derivative is bounded by epsilon also. Okay, so I get exactly the same statement about the derivative. And similarly, of course, the second derivative. So let's say that these converge to F, G, and H. All right, so now if I just look at these first two, F and F prime, and I remember my theorem on 9.18 that told us what happened if I had the convergence of the derivatives and also the original function. What can I say about the relationship between little f and little g? Right, exactly. That g is actually equal to the derivative of f. Okay. Okay, but I can just do it again, right? So what about the relationship between H and G? Right, exactly. So, and by 9.18, we have that H is equal to G prime, which of course is equal to F double prime from above. Okay, so I have that this is equal to F prime, and this is equal to F double prime. All right, so I actually have the convergence that I wanted. Hence, and let me just write it out in gory detail, just to make it, I hope, clear. So I'm just going to copy now. My goal, of course, is to show that it's convergent, right? I had this sequence that was Cauchy. I want to show that it's convergent. So let me just write out the formula here for convergent, okay, and see that I have it. So hence, for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists n. Let me write it as n, m, and l. So I got three things, so that each one of these things converges. This one converges, that one converges, and that one converges, right? Because they each converge uniformly. And let me just put it all together into one sentence so I don't have to write as much. So that whenever I take n bigger than or equal to n, m bigger than or equal to m, and l bigger than or equal to l, we have the three things that I wanted. So the soup norm of f n minus f is less than epsilon over 3. And here's where I'm going to use epsilon over 3, by the way, right? And the soup norm of f m minus f prime is less than or equal to epsilon over 3. And finally, the second derivative also has this property for L. Sorry, kind of cramped at the end there. But okay, is that clear? So all I'm using is the fact that each of these converges uniformly, right? And what they converge to are F prime and F double prime. So this is just those three statements just written out that they all converge, okay? Okay, so for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists. All right, so if I want all of them to be less than epsilon when I add them up, what should I choose for my constant, for my number here? Is that clear? So what I want is for all r greater than r, we have that the C2 norm of f r minus f is less than epsilon. So, and then I'll be done. What can I put here? Yes, exactly. So I see it in the chat. All I need is that each one of these things holds. And so if I take the maximum of N, M, and L, I will have done that. Okay, so then each of those holds and I get a third, and actually a sixth because I stuck in a half here. But in any case, it's less than epsilon. So I'm done, all right? So this is equal to the max of N, M, and L, okay? And I am done. So any questions about how the structure of such a proof works? Maybe I'll add one more sentence. And says that this Fn is C2 convergent. Okay, very good. So as I advertised, I would like to move on to a power series, which is a special case that we'll focus on for a while. But let me just do one more thing with these norms, which is kind of fun and which motivates this one half. Okay, so let me, and also maybe I'll see if I can get chat breakout rooms to work this morning. So so here's a fun note, which is that these norms have an extra property, which actually has a name, but I'm not going to even define it, but these are Banach algebras. And it says that products work nicely. Remember, I noted earlier that products work reasonably nicely and that we stay inside the spaces, but they also work really well with respect to these norms. So let me just do the simplest one. So if we have f and g are just continuous functions, then if I take the largest value that their product takes, how is that going to be related to the largest value of the first one times the largest value of the second one? Is that clear? Exactly. Yeah. So someone has it exactly right. It's less than or equal to. It could be that that these two soups take place at different places, so it might be bigger on the right. Okay. But it's certainly less than or equal. And that's true in more generality. So this one, and here's the second one. If we have two that are differentiable, continuously differentiable, so they're in C1 of 0, 1, then I claim that if I take the C1 norm of the product. Okay, so what is that? So by definition, that's the soup norm of the product plus the soup norm of the derivative. And what's the derivative of a product? Well, we can use our product rule. So we have f prime g plus fg prime, just using our product rule. Okay, so that's the definition together with the product rule. But now how can I get that this is less than or equal to, so first of all, I can use the one that I just wrote above. So that is just copying what I did above. Okay, but then the other terms, I claim that I can break that up even more. And so let me just write it all out and then you can tell me how I can justify this. Okay, so I'm using the above, but what's the other thing that I'm using? Is that clear? It's kind of messy there, but so I took this second term here, which is, exactly. It's a triangle inequality. I split it into this one plus that one, okay? And I got an inequality because that's the triangle inequality. And then I split each one up just like above, okay? So there's a couple steps from there, but that's the right answer. And the triangle inequality. Okay. Okay, but if I collect terms, this is then less than or equal to the product of the sums. Which is equal to the C1 norm of F times the C1 norm of G. So it has this interesting multiplicative property. Okay, and there's one more inequality to justify. So why do I get this inequality? Can everyone follow that? It basically amounts to kind of multiplying it out. So can anyone see why it's not an equality here? Yeah, there's one more term. This F prime times G prime occurs down in the bottom one, but not up here. There are only three terms, and of course, when I FOIL this out, there'll be four terms here. So I'm missing just one of them. Okay. So claim. Same thing is true if I take F and G in C2. Then we get the C2 norm of the product is less than or equal to the product of the C2 norms. Okay. Let me give you a minute or two to try that in a breakout room just to see if. But let me add one other fact. Also, if I take the C2 tilde, so some new norm to be the one where I just add them instead of putting in that 1/2. So the soup norm of F plus the soup norm of the derivative plus 1 times, so just the whole thing times the soup norm of the second derivative instead of 1/2 there. Then this fails. And it fails if I take F equals G equals X. Then I have that the FG C tilde 2 is not less than or equal to F C tilde 2 times G C tilde 2. Okay, and so I'd like you to check that. So there are two things you can do, and do whichever one you think you can see how to do. So either the one where you are trying to find that it works for this standard C2, or the more obvious guess for C2, it actually fails. And I've suggested that you try this particular pair of functions, although you could try another one. And so in particular, you might want to compute those two sides for this particular pair of functions and just see that they are. Don't satisfy the inequality that you want. Okay, so if there are no questions, let me see if I can get this working. Yeah, people are just about to come back from breakout rooms. Okay, let's see. So did people get that to work? So like, let me label these A and B. And so then, so A was that it actually works here, and B is that it doesn't work for this variation. Let's see. So let's start with B. So did anyone figure out B, that if we take this variant where we put a one there instead of a half, that this inequality fails? So did people get that to work? Or in particular, did you figure out what those two numbers would be? No. Well, let's just try it briefly here. So if we have f is equal to x, then what is the C2 norm of x? So we have to remember where we're living here. So it's from 0 to 1. And let me compare these two. So there's the C2 norm, and then there's the C2 tilde norm. Okay. Yes, that's right. Someone has it correct here. And the way we do that is we just take the sup norm in both cases. And then we take the derivative. So we take the sup norm of 1 in both cases. And then we take the derivative again. So we take the sup norm, half of the sup norm of 0 in the one case, and 1 times the sup norm of 0 in the other case. Doesn't matter. Both of them are 1 plus 1 plus 0, right, in both cases. So we end up with 2 for both of them. Is that clear? Everyone got that? Okay, and then for the left-hand side, we're going to need the product of those two things, right? So we have this x squared and what did people get for that? Right. Okay. Now I see the right answer. Yes. So there are these. Now there are three terms, right? Because the second derivative of x squared is not 0. It's 2. So we have the zeroth derivative, the first derivative, and the second derivative all contribute, right? And so this one is going to be 1, and this one is going to be 2, and this one is going to be 2. And so in the first case we get 4, in the second case we get 5, right? So in the one case we have the equality, and the other case we have the wrong inequality. So this is going to be equal to 4, and this one's going to be equal to 5. So the 2 norm, the C2 norm of x squared is just equal to the C2 norm of x squared in this particular case. But if we use this bad version, the tilde version, then we actually get that it's bigger. Okay, any questions about the notation and what that means? That's basically an exercise to run through and understand the notation. We're never going to use the fact that this gives us a beautiful extra structure, this Banach algebra structure, although it is useful in other contexts. Okay, any further questions about Banach spaces then before I move on to the special case of power series? Okay, so power series. So let me just run through quickly. So the first thing to do is to specialize what we know. So this is theorem, I guess it's 9.21 and 9.22. And it's just restating Cauchy conditions for series. And we've already done it a couple times, but it's just formalizing something we've already done. So Cauchy for series. Okay, so our setup for series is if we have some normed vector space. Norm Cauchy, if and only if. Okay, we can just write it out. So the usual thing, for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some capital M. For all little n and little m bigger than or equal to capital M, we have that the difference is less than epsilon, but this time we can just write the difference in a tidier way, and that's the only thing we're doing here. So what is the difference between these two sums? Well, it's just the terms that that are in between them. So this is going to be just the sum from little n bigger than, bigger than n and less than or equal to little m of f sub j, and then we just take the norm of that whole thing. And that's awesome. It's just restating it, right? We're just taking the difference of these two sums, and you just get the terms that are left. Okay, and then B, the usual way, the cleanest way to be able to do this, sometimes it's true. So Fn is a Cauchy if, and actually it is, however, worth noticing, not only F this time, this is only a sufficient condition for this one, but it's very easy and therefore one that one wants to be able to use when possible. It just says that to get all of these things to be small, all we need is that the limit as n goes to infinity of the sum of the norms. Needs to be bounded. Or another way to write that is it's less than infinity. Another way to say that this one exists. Okay. So that's just the easiest criterion. And so we're happy when we can get that sort of criterion. Okay. And so then the example that we're primarily going to be looking at is power series. So power series notation. A power series about C with coefficients AN is written as the sum, and the notation is usually N equals zero to infinity. Of an x minus c to the n, okay? And of course, this just means the limit it's just shorter as n goes to infinity. Okay, so then the next thing we're going to do is have some synonyms about this, but I'm almost out of time, so let me just ask one question and see if people can follow it. So question, find X for which each of these two series converge and diverge. And okay, so let's say we just have a minute left. So just quickly, let's start with A. Can you think of a value of X for which this is a convergent series? Yeah, less than one seems better to me, right? So so actually, if I do plug in one, what happens to this series? All right, if I plug in one, then I get one plus one plus one out to infinity, right? So this diverges. But if I plug in something less than one, then it converges. So A... So the sum of, say, a half to the n, n equals 0 to infinity, is equal to 2, which is exists. But the so this is x equals a half. But if I look at the sum of 1 to the n, this does not exist. This is x equals 1, and this is both in the case A. So is that clear, right? So it goes to infinity. And this is related to, as we'll see next time, one over one minus x, which we saw earlier in the Taylor series. Actually, what function is this one related to just from our earlier analysis? That's right. This one's related to e to the x. Okay, and then just the final thing I want to say before ending. Can you find values of x for which this one converges or diverges? It's a slightly trick question. So let's start with convergence.